Orchids are stunning flowers, often so perfect looking that it's hard to believe that they're real on occasion. We have a worldwide world authority on orchids right here in Wisconsin, Chuck Aker. Chuck has a great business. He propagates and sells orchids through his business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. Been working with orchids for close to 40 years, probably. And I don't know what he doesn't know. I mean, it's pretty much he knows anything that you might imagine about orchids. And it's great to have him with us and great to have you listening in. Are you an orchid fanatic or are you somebody maybe interested in getting started in orchids? I hope you'll join in with your questions and also with your experiences. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. Love to hear from you. And Chuck, welcome back. Great to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks, Larry. It's always a pleasure to be here with you and your wonderful listeners.
What part of the world do orchids, where do they originate?
Well, actually, the orchids are found naturally on every continent in the world except the Antarctica. So if you can believe that, I mean, there's orchids even existing above the Arctic Circle in the tundra. There's orchids here in Wisconsin that are native. So honestly, orchids on every continent in the world except the Antarctica. It is the world's largest flowering plant family.
What really defines an orchid from other flowering plants?
Well, that's a really good question. There's one of the simplest things I think that I like to explain to people that I think they can understand easily is the orchid flower itself is called zygomorphic. And what that means is if you're looking at the orchid flower face to face and you look at it and you can only divide that flower in half on one particular plane and have mirrored halves on both sides. So that's really one of the things that's probably easily identified with an orchid. I mean, if you looked at a dandelion, for instance, and you could divide that dandelion in half on many different planes and have equal mirrored halves to it, whereas the orchid is only dividable on one particular plane. So if you can imagine just looking at that and cutting it in half and having equal sides on both halves. One of the other most important things in taxonomy is the orchid is a monocot. There's dicot and monocot plant families, and basically the monocot simply means that it has one seed leaf. So as it germinates, it just has the one particular leaf coming out of its embryo. There's several other things, too, in some of the reproductive parts. When you start dissecting the orchid flower, which the taxonomists definitely do, you will notice that most flowers have a pistil and a stamen, the two reproductive parts of any flower. The orchid has those, obviously, but they're fused together in what's commonly called a column or a staminode. So both of those reproductive parts are housed in one particular portion of the flower. Those are really the three real key things that I think most anybody can really identify with.
And when we buy an orchid, it's usually in bloom or about to bloom. And those blossoms, they generally last a long time, at least in my experience. And it's always great if you can get them to bloom again. And that's always the issue. What do we need to, you know, how do you get those, how do you encourage them to bloom again?
Well, there's several factors. You know, here in Wisconsin, I think our biggest issue is light. A lot of people will think that, well, if they just have the plant, you know, sitting on the kitchen island, you know, 10, 15 feet away from any window, it's going to do good like some houseplants will definitely. But the orchid, you know, while it's in flower, it really doesn't need a lot of light, definitely doesn't need any direct sunshine. But once they're done flowering and you'd like to recycle the plant and get it to bloom again, the orchid likes a lot of light. So that's one key factor, is to try to get it stepped up into the window. Generally speaking, in our climate here, we like to see the east window used primarily, a shaded south or west. Some orchids like to be set outside for the summer, primarily in the shade. So that really helps. Giving them good light will give you good growth and subsequently will give you good flowers. And one other thing I think a lot of people fail to realize is that the orchid does like the cooler nighttime temperatures. It's kind of a misnomer that, you know, you think the orchid, it comes from the steamy jungles of, you know, the Amazon or something like that. The orchid loves to have the bright, warmish day and then have that drop of the temperature at night. So again, when it's up against your window during the winter time here in Wisconsin, or even outside in the summertime, you get that warm day, cool night cycle, and that's very, very important for the orchid to set its bloom spikes.
How many times, how often might an orchid rebloom?
Gosh, you know, some of the orchid varieties that are sold out on the market now have been hybridized to the point where they almost continually flower. We have Phalaenopsis orchids that are like that nowadays, where one set of flowers expires, a new flower stem emerges shortly thereafter or even at the same time that it's flowering. Some varieties of lady slipper orchids are sequentially flowering. They'll continue to produce flowers, you know, one after another. There's so many different things now going on with orchids due to the hybridization processes going on that they typically will be blooming almost more than when they're not flowering. I mean, back in the day, we're typically dealing with orchids that would flower once a year to maybe twice a year. But boy, has that changed in the last decade or so.
We have some callers online. By the way, there's an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Phil in Hebron, Illinois, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Larry and guest. I have a quick question for you. I commercially grow woody plants, and I've been in a conversation for about 6 months over the internet with an expert grower from Japan and a fellow from the EU. And we've been talking about biostimulants back and forth, and I've been doing some work with them. And the fellow from Japan finally made this statement through a translation. If you really want to know about biostimulants, you talk to an aromatic grower or a orchid grower or a bonsai person. They've been using them for a long time, but I don't really know what they'll tell you about what they're having success with and not. He said there's a lot of trade secrets. Want to know if you know anything about them.
Oh, you know, you got me there. We've never used them in production in our facility. I know nothing about them. We've grown everything just, you know, basically what you'd call old school way. And, you know, I think everything has been doing very, very well for us under that method. I know that some of the really large commercial growers that have moved into the country that have come from abroad are more than likely the growers that are, you know, more involved with using a product like that. So I'm sorry, I can't help you on that one.
No, yeah, I haven't really heard that the term even.
No, so. No, that's a new one, yeah.
The new one on us, Phil. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Somebody else may call in with some comments, so stay listening. Stephen Appleton, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. I'm hoping you can help me. I'm having trouble with mealybugs on my orchids.
Okay.
Is there a way to treat them?
Yeah, mealybug is a common pest for the orchid. It gets up on the flower and under the leaves and in crevasses, of course, you know, and it's a common pest for a lot of houseplants. One of the best products that we recommend to use in the home would be the insecticidal soap product. And it's sold under different trade names like Safers and Bear will make it now. Many different companies actually make insecticidal soap. And basically what it is, it is a soap water solution that does not have any dye or perfume to it. You can make your own soap water solution out of Ivory dishwashing detergent and some water, but I'd recommend just buying the commercial stuff because, again, it isn't perfumed and dyed and it is very safe to use. It's non-effective to the flowers or any part of the plant, so you can spray all of that. The only thing with using insecticidal soap is that you have to be very thorough when you're spraying the product and ensure that you actually get the bug wet. If you don't get the bug wet with the product, it is really not going to work because it only works as a contact type of spray. So be real thorough with that. If you have used Safer soap in the past and you've hit a wall and it's not working for you, that's probably because you haven't used it properly or haven't used it in proper intervals. And then either try that and use it in a proper interval and use it properly, or go to a heavier artillery product, which I call the more chemical family material, where you start using things that you want to maybe go outside and spray. Like, there's a really great product called Bear Rose and Flower Spray. And okay. that is, you know, more of a chemical family. So you want to be a little bit cautious when you use it. It works three ways, so you don't have to be so thorough in getting the bug wet. It'll work systemically, residually, and on contact. So that's, again, another product that's sold very, very widely in all the garden centers and hardware stores and stuff nowadays. So those, either one of those two should knock that mealybug right down if it's used properly.
So is that safe for the roots as well?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And when you go to spray either the Safer Soap or the Bare Rose and Flower, you want to spray thoroughly to the point of where it's running off. And don't be afraid to, you know, spray heavy enough where it actually does start to seep down into the potting mix a little bit. There are eggs and larvae and sometimes even adults down in that potting mix.
So I wouldn't even have to repot everything if I treat them thoroughly through the rinse.
That's correct. Initially start out with a good spraying program, and if you find that you're not getting the control that you want, then of course you'd have to pull it out of the pot and do a bare root spraying, meaning that you've got the plant out of the pot,
sure,
totally, you know, media totally removed, and then you can spray the roots and the plant and, you know, everything really thoroughly, let that dry up completely, and then repot it with some fresh media, because it just depends on the how heavy your infestation is. It's going to be a lot to do with it.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show. Do you grow orchids? What varieties have you had good experiences with? We'd love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mealer. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, our guest today, Chuck Aker on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at orchids today with Chuck Aker is with the Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, and also propagates and sells orchids through his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. And you know, when you say flasks, what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, it's not the kind of flask that you put in your boot when you go to the rock concert or something like that. No, the flask is a commonly used term in the orchid industry for the vessel or the container that the orchid seed is actually germinated and grown in for a number of months, sometimes up to 2 years. So the orchid seed is germinated in a very specialized condition under sterile conditions with a nutrient agar solution. So it's a very, very slow and delicate process, and the flask is that container, and they can come in plastics or bottles or just about any kind of vessel that can actually be sealed up and remain sterile where the plants can develop. So it's basically like in vitro type production.
Mm. And then do you send those off to, you mail those off to folks? Or
I do, yes. Personally, I breed and sell Phragmopedium and Paphiopedilum flasks on the internet under my own name for a side business. And I also breed for the garden center, for the Orchids Garden Center and Nursery as well. So, yeah, that's been kind of a hobby, a side business that I've been doing now since 1996. And the flask is very easily packed up and mailed all over the country. We don't do any international shipping of the material, but, you know, there's like 30, 35 little orchid seedlings in this quart-sized container. And, you know, hobby growers and commercial growers alike, they will buy the orchid at that stage and raise it up to its flowering size from there. It's really the best way to start out with new varieties.
Mary in Middleton has a question for you. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two very easy questions probably for you and quick. The first one is, I've got one flower left on my orchid. It has been blooming and producing flowers for 5 months. It's been wonderful. And then I was told when this one flower then dies and falls off that I should cut the stem close to the bottom or something.
Okay. Do you have a Phalaenopsis orchid there?
I don't know what it is. Yeah, that's what it was. There was a little card attached to it.
Okay.
And that's what it was.
Okay. Yes, the Phalaenopsis orchid will bloom for many months. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably one of the, again, one of the longer lasting, longer blooming orchid varieties that are sold. One of the best orchid varieties to grow in the house as well, by the way. So yes, when the flower is actually, your last flower is actually expired, the rule of thumb would be to, you see those little nodes on the stem from down by the plant
yes.
on up, there's these little connections called nodes. So yes, the rule of thumb is to count up from the bottom of that stem about four nodes and cut right above that fourth node. So basically what you're doing is cutting off only the section of the stem that actually bore the flowers.
Yeah, and then this, my plant, from the one stem grew two other stems that flowers came out on them.
Okay, so you've got kind of a branching effect on there then as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I would probably just cut that one right below where the first branch was, or first branch is. So again, just thinking about cutting off only the section of that stem that actually bore the flowers and leaving the rest of the stem on the plant. And what that does, it encourages those lower nodes on the rest of that stem to branch out a whole new flower stem.
Okay.
Wow.
Do that initially, and if you don't see any action after a couple of months, you don't see any growth coming out of there, be patient. Sometimes it takes a couple months for anything to happen. Then after that, just go ahead and cut that stem completely off, and then the plant will regenerate a whole new stem, which will produce a whole new set of flowers. So, yeah, our care sheet posted on our website at orchidsgardencenter.com is quite extensive, and it actually shows some of the places where to cut the stems off as well. So if you're on the internet, you can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
My other question is, the roots of an orchid come out all the pot all the time. How do you know when to replant it?
Well, they do have an active aerial root system, and that is very common because most orchids are epiphytes in nature, meaning that they are growing on other plants in their native. So these orchids are found commonly grown up in the tree branches in their native environment. So the root system does like to crawl out of the pot and start going about out in the atmosphere like that. That is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing to see some of that. That means your plant is very healthy and doing very well. At some point in that plant's cycle of flowering on a yearly or every 2 year basis, it will need to be transplanted. We like to see the plant get very, very robust in the pot, with lots of roots crawling around outside as well as inside the pot before we want to disturb them with a repotting process. So, you know, it's kind of a tough call without seeing the plant, but try to let it go until you feel that the thing is really crowded in there and you got a lot of roots going around.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. You've been so helpful.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling, Mary. Appreciate your call. And when you go to repot, those roots that were exposed to the air, do you leave them exposed to the air?
No, generally not. They'll actually get tucked back into the pot and covered up with the fresh potting medium, and they'll start to do their thing in the pot and fill up that area again. And then new roots will actually emerge from the plant close to the surface of the potting media, and then they'll start to crawl around and start going outside the pot and all over the place. So the root system is very cyclic on the orchid. And deep down in the pot, there's always some of the very old roots that will actually die off. And at the time of repotting, those can be, you know, cut off and trimmed away and cleaned up. So it kind of cleans up everything in that zone. So, yeah, the orchid root is a very interesting substance. It's more like a sponge is what it is. The root itself is actually just a very, very hard, wiry core. And then out around the outside of that is what's called the velamen. And that's basically a big sponge. And so when the water comes by it, it soaks it up immediately. the potting medium that's actually in these pots for these orchids is basically there to actually hold and support the plant. It's not there to hold moisture. So that's one of the things that we see, you know, when people will plant an orchid in houseplant soil or something like that, it is often the demise of their plant because the houseplant soil holds too much moisture. The orchid root is designed to hold the moisture, and that's why it's designed, you know, with that velamen around it.
Mm. Our guest, Chuck Aker, today, talking about orchids with him, and certainly looking forward to your questions or comments or your experiences with orchids. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. On my Facebook page, from David, who wonders, is the yellow lady slipper an orchid? If so, I had a young lady slipper for over 30 years in my front yard. I've had as many as 50 blooms from the clump. This year, only a few stalks emerged. They withered and were gone, moving and to a new home. Can he take it along with him?
Oh, yeah. That is one of the yellow lady slipper is one of the native orchids here in Wisconsin. There's some 42 or 46 naturally occurring orchids here in Wisconsin. There's a lot of folks around town, around the area, around the state that have the yellow lady slipper growing in their yard or on their property. As far as moving it, yeah, it's definitely movable. It's a tough call. Sometimes they don't transplant well. When I've had experience, and other people too have mentioned, it's best to take as much soil and as big a clump as you can, so you have that symbiotic relationship with that surroundings, and you know that sometimes constitutes taking a bushel basket's worth of material with you. And then, of course, finding the place that's suitable to transplant it, which, you know, has a lot to do with the plant as well, whether it's an acidic situation or not. I am not a foremost native orchid specialist, and I always defer my customers to Scott Weber up in Baraboo, Wisconsin, who is one of our local orchid club members, and he has specialized in native Wisconsin orchids for, oh my gosh, years. I've known Scott since the 80s. He's got a website, bluestemfarms.com, and he can answer some questions on native orchids for sure, and he'll be able to tell you exactly where this plant should go and the pH and the kind of substrate it needs to be in and so on. But it does sound like his plant is kind of heading south a little bit since he had such a big clump and is now down to, you know, just a little bit there. So there might be some other issues going on there as well.
So we'll post we'll post that up on my Facebook page, Judith Well. So if you want to go there and learn some more about the natives, why, please feel free.
Excellent.
Ashley in Middleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Perfect. Thanks a lot.
Good. So I have an orchid, and I think it needs to be repotted. My question is, well, how do I know it needs to be repotted? What size pot should I put it in? Like, how much larger should it be than the base or the root system? And what sort of material should I put in that pot?
Well, those are all really great questions, and typically we like to see the orchid repotted every year to every 2 years max. So if you think you've had it that long, it'd probably be time to do a repotting on it.
Okay.
Is the size of the pot, that's always a real tricky one. And I always tell my customers, you want to always kind of repot the orchid on the tight side, meaning that, you know, you might not think that that pot is, you know, big enough, but that's kind of where you want to be with them. They like to be crowded, so keep that in mind. If you can easily insert the whole root system into the pot without having to do any tucking or pushing or anything to get them all in there, then you probably have too large of a pot. So we like to have them transplanted on the snug side, you know, so it can rebound its root system nice and quick. As far as the material to be used, it depends what it is existingly growing in now. Do you know if it is in a sphagnum moss type of mix or a bark.
It doesn't really look like there's anything in the pot, to be honest. It's a clear pot, and okay. It's just see the root system.
Oh. Well, that's a tough one. When you put your finger in the top there, do you see any chunks of material, or does it look more like a mossy type of material?
More mossy on the top,
okay.
Just near the base of the stem of the flower.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's possible that it's growing in the sphagnum moss, and if it is indeed growing in sphagnum moss, we would like to see it repot it in that same product, because it really avoids transplant shock. And if it's growing in a bark-based mix, when you pull it out of the pot, the bark just basically all falls away. It's a chunky, coarse type of potting media, so that'll be really easy to distinguish, and if that's what you have, then you can just... If you live in Middleton, you can just pop over to our garden center and buy a small bag of our orchid potting bark mix and pot it. Or your other option is to bring it out to us, and we will repot it for you, and you can watch.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
That sounds like the good way to do it. I mean, you're sure you're going to get it done right then.
That's correct, yeah. And it's sometimes for the first-time grower, that is what they want to do. They kind of want to see the process being done, because it is a little different than your average houseplant, of course, using the different types of potting medias and things. And the root system, of course, is entirely different. But, yeah, we offer that service for a small fee, and the customers can usually take part in it at some point.
Chuck Aker, our guest today. Call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Judith is reminding me that you mentioned bluestemfarm.com for Scott Weber. There is a totally different place in Virginia that is Bluestem Farms with an S.
Okay.
So we don't use the S.
Okay.
Say Bluestem Farm, or just go to my Facebook page and click on what we've got. I'm confident that Judith has the right address on the Facebook page. Karen sent us some photos. Here's a boy, I'm telling you, Vanda orchids?
That is a beauty, yes, the
Whoa,
Vanda. Yes,
the color, the blue is really something.
You know, when that particular orchid variety flowers at our place, it literally stops traffic.
Wow.
The color on that particular Vanda, the periwinkle blue, is not a color that's really commonly seen in a lot of the orchids. It's just so unique and so different. They are an amazing, amazing flower. When it first opens up, the flower is actually very, very pathetic. You would look at it and say, oh my gosh, this really isn't what I saw it in a picture. The flower opens and it's only like 2.5 or 3 inches in diameter, and it's very pale white and it's kind of contorted, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what did I do? I really messed this one up growing it. And then every day thereafter, the flower just morphs into this big, beautiful, dark periwinkle blue specimen. I mean, the flower goes from that 2.5 inch pathetic, contorted, pale thing to upwards to a 5 or 6 inch flower when it is
wow.
fully ripened. I mean, it takes several days to a week for this whole process to happen, and it's really interesting to watch it, and it's just really a stunning, stunning flower.
Yeah, as you listen to Chuck and I talk, you might want to go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's where it is, on Facebook, and take a look at that orchid, because, man, are they expensive? Are they...
Well, that one we have at the greenhouse right now running at $35, and we have quite a few of them in flower right at the moment, and we will have more blooming and spiking. That is a particular type of orchid that blooms several times a year, so that is a dandy, and that one really likes our Wisconsin climate due to the fact that it likes our cooler nighttime temperatures, so... throwing it outside in the shade for the summertime and hang it from the tree or whatever and splash it with some water every few days, and those plants just thrive in our climate. They
yeah.
just thrive.
And Karen also sent a photo of Phalaenopsis orchids, which are, I guess, are most commonly grown, but they're beautiful and they're easy to grow.
Yeah, the Phalaenopsis is definitely the main staple. I mean, you see them all over nowadays. They're certainly, you know, one of the more popular indoor house plants for flowering. You've got blooming longevity on this type of orchid upwards to 5-6 months in most cases. And again, the caller previously stating hers was blooming for 5 months, and you just simply cut the stems back and, you know, they reflower so easily, long lasting. They don't take up a lot of room and they're super low maintenance for care. I mean, if you water them things once every 2 weeks, you know, it's just really a low maintenance.
That's about it.
Yeah.
We had, you know, you were talking earlier about mealybugs. Somebody called about them. I'm wondering about other insects. Are there other insects or pests that give our orchids a problem?
Yeah, there are. You know, you're running across things like the aphid, the mealybug, of course, the spider mite, the thrip. One of the things that's probably most common, again, in the home environment is the spider mite. That's, you know, crawling around on a lot of houseplants, too. But there's only there's not a lot of orchid genera that are affected by the spider mite. The Cymbidium orchid is probably one of the more tasty orchid plants that the mite will go after. Pretty easily eradicated, though, if you get on top of it right away, just simply using some of the oils, the oil sprays or the soap sprays like that, or if you use other chemicals. Actually, just simply washing the leaves with water commonly will eradicate spider mite pretty easily, because mites hate water. So, you know, in the wintertime, you take it to the tub or something and just hose it down. In summertime, take the hose outside and rinse the leaves off. But there's really not too much in the orchid family. Just, you know, aphids, spider mite, mealybug. It's really probably the most common ones. And we get, you know, other things in the greenhouse, obviously, because we have the ultimate environment for it. But in the house, really, those are the three main ones that are going to give you the problems.
And what about on the disease side? What about diseases that we have to worry about?
Well, common diseases, again, with plants, you know, you're dealing with that same thing. One of the biggest things, I think, with the orchid family is the viruses that are inherent to the orchid family. And there's, I think, some 30 different orchid viruses out there. And, you know, orchid virus is different from, you know, a bacterial infection or a fungal infection. It's an invisible organism that gets into the cells of the plant, and there's really no cure for it. So once your orchid is contaminated with a virus, it can live with that virus for its whole entire life, basically. But what it does is it really has an effect on how the plant is going to grow ultimately, and sometimes it has an effect on the flower quality. You'll get color streaking and color break in your blooms. You'll get distorted and deformed flowers and things like that. And it's most widely spread by sucking and chewing type insects, which would be your spider mites and your thrips. And you know, the other real common vector of spreading it is us, our hands, our cutting tools, our surfaces that we're working with the plants on. So it's really important, if you have a collection of orchids and you're doing your repotting and you're cutting your flower stems off and you're cutting your roots and stuff like that, is to sterilize your tools between each plant. And you can either use a single-edged razor blade and dispose of that, or use a tool that you can flame heat just gently to sterilize the cutting surface of that tool. And of course, washing your hands in between plants if you feel that you've gotten the plant juice on your hands at all, because it does transmit by having the juice from plant to plant. So those are really probably one of the bigger things versus, you know, bacteria, fungus, and other diseases that commonly occur with orchids.
Sure. Jill in Milwaukee has a question for you. Hi, Jill.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. What can we do for you?
Well, I heard him on the program before talking about his vanilla orchid that he has. And I didn't know that you got vanilla beans from an orchid until I heard him on that program. And I've started making my own vanilla at home, which is really easy.
Excellent.
And I wanted to grow my own vanilla orchid, but I can't find any. I was lucky to find any kind of orchids in Milwaukee. And the only kind they have are the ones that he's mentioned before.
Right.
That's interesting, you know, because they are available in Madison.
Really?
Yeah. We've got hundreds of vanillas. If you can't venture out to our place, we're just on the north edge of Madison. If you can't venture out, we'd be happy to mail order you one.
I would love to come to your place.
Oh.
I want to venture out there, and I've been meaning to all summer, but I haven't got there.
Okay.
But I do want to come, and I would love to get a vanilla orchid. And I've told people about this, and nobody ever knew that vanilla beans came from orchids. So they were all like, oh, my God. So, we all kind of think it's pretty neat.
Right.
And they grow inside then, these?
Yeah. The vanilla is a great orchid plant to be grown as a house plant. You can grow it indoors for the months that you need to. And then they also do love to summer themselves outside, primarily in the shade, but they will tolerate some sunshine. It's one of the few orchid species that actually is a vining type of plant, so it's an interesting plant to grow just simply for that fact, because its voracious vining ability. You can make yourself a little trellis or an obelisk, and you can get this thing to wind around and go anywhere you want. Literally, you can have it go across your kitchen ceiling if you want. The roots will stick to just about anything that you can get it close to.
I had ordered one in the mail, and they sent no directions, and all it was a little, like a root, and I killed it right away. I didn't know anything about, and then I ended up ordering orchid medium in the mail, that mm-hmm. dark stuff that you were talking about, so I have that.
Mm-hmm.
But by that time it was way too late, so I at least have that.
Yeah.
And I did buy one of the other kind of orchids in the store, and it's doing really, really well.
Oh, good. Yeah, definitely come out and see us.
I would love to come and see you, and thank you for the call.
Oh, thanks for calling.
I've got all of your email stuff written down here and everything, so I can get a hold of you and find out. And I do know where you're at. I've been that way many times.
Excellent.
Right. Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. What's the process of harvesting vanilla from the orchids?
Well, it's a very interesting process. The whole vanilla thing itself is just so, so intriguing, and no one really can realize that the vanilla flavoring and scents that we have come from this vanilla orchid. We have probably the world-renowned vanilla expert here in Madison at our university, Dr. Ken Cameron, and he has published a beautiful, beautiful hardcover 200-page book on vanilla orchid species. I mean, he's dedicated basically his life to this. Really, really interesting publication. I highly recommend people to pick this publication up. You grow the vanilla as a vine like that, and once it flowers, you pollinate the bloom. A very, very simple process. Can show you that on any orchid flower. The mechanics of that is all the same on most of these blooms. Once you've pollinated the flower, the pollinated flower turns into the vanilla bean itself, which is essentially the seed pod. You let that totally mature. And from that process on, it gets a little complicated. Again, I'm an orchid grower, so extracting the vanilla from the pod itself is a whole process in itself, and that is why vanilla is so expensive. One interesting fact about the vanilla flower is that it actually only stays open or lasts about 12 hours. So for the production purpose, in the vineyards of Madagascar in Mexico where these plants are produced, these people got to go in there and pollinate these blooms every morning, because by the afternoon the flower is expired and subsequently they'll miss their chance to create a bean. So it's a very, very laborious crop to grow in production like that, but it is a super, super fun plant to have in captivity.
Chuck Aker with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, and it sells his own orchids through his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. Join in at 800-642-1234. So a non-professional might have a little problem, but they could be successful, I guess, growing vanilla orchids for the vanilla itself.
Yes, absolutely. We have a specimen plant mounted on our greenhouse wall. It climbs up and down on the glass, so the roots just stick right to the glass and to the wood rafters and stuff. It's really fun to watch grow. It blooms generally in the spring, and of course I go and pollinate the flowers, and you know, huge clusters of beans are hanging on it, and when the beans are ripe, I just give them to a friend of mine, and she does her magical curing process, which I don't know anything about. One person told me, just simply put them on the back deck of your car and let them bake in the sunshine there for a while inside your car. But yeah, really, really fun plant to see and to have. It's really fun.
And Karen, actually, somewhere here up on my Facebook page, Karen posted a vanilla photo. Yeah, it's here somewhere.
Yeah, there. It's typically the vining. I mean, it looks a lot like a Hoya, you know, from a distance. You say, oh, is that a Hoya? But vine is real thick, and the leaves are real fleshy, and then it has air roots that will come out at every leaf internode, and those air roots are there to attach themselves to whatever, so it can support itself and grow. I've seen these things in the jungle, you know, start out at the ground and go up, you know, 60, 70 feet up, straight up a palm tree.
Wow.
And there's a really nice specimen of a vanilla here in Madison at Olbrich Gardens. I'd highly recommend to get out there. And, you know, they bloom in the springtime, so it's a good time to get out and see one there flowering.
Chuck Yeager, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at orchids today on this edition of Garden Talk with Chuck Yeager of Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. We have a link to the center, I believe, on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, but what's the address of that your place?
The physical address is 4823 County Road Q.
4823 County Road Q.
Correct. And that's, we're still labeled Wanakee out there, but we are literally surrounded by Middleton. So that can get kind of confusing for people, and GPS and so on takes them into Wanakee by the high school, and then they're lost. But yeah.
And the website is called, what's the website?
OrchidsGardenCenter.com.
OrchidsGardenCenter.com.
Yep.
All right, there we go. Anita in Bessemer, Michigan, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Larry. I'd like to ask a question about my Philotnopsis orchid. It's just not doing too good. It's getting all kinds of spindly green limbs coming out of the top, but it just doesn't bloom, and it's been like this for several months, most of the summer.
Well, have you had it transplanted or repotted in the recent past?
It's been in the same pot. I got it as a gift, and okay. It bloomed beautifully for a long time,
right?
But then all of a sudden I cut one of the stems, but I left the other stem up, and now all these spindly green, kind of cumbersome little vines are coming out of the top, and it's got a little thing on the end, but I thought maybe those are going to be flowers, but nothing's happening.
Okay. Well, so you're saying you got these spindly things growing out of the top of the flower stem that where you cut it off?
I didn't cut anything off.
Okay.
Coming out from the top.
Okay. Yeah, that could be the early stages of some more bloom shoots there. It sounds a little peculiar, but depending on what type of Phalaenopsis hybrid it is, I have seen them you know, described like that. So that could be the early stages of a whole bunch of flower spikes coming.
That's what I kind of thought.
Yeah, give it some time there and just, you know, keep it in a nicely lit window where you get that morning sunshine. That's always their favorite spot.
That's where I've got.
Good.
Maybe we're not getting enough sunshine here in the western UP.
Well,
that's
highly possible. But again, you know, the eastern exposure is their favorite window. So, and then just be patient. You know, things do slow down a bit, you know, at certain times of the year. So just, you know, be patient with those.
I'll All keep right. watching it. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Waiting
Anita.
For it to bloom.
There you go. Thanks, Anita. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, we had a Facebook question from Gail, who says, I have an 8-year-old Phalaenopsis. sits in my west window, and I water and otherwise ignore it.
Yep.
Seems to be happy, but hasn't bloomed recently. Probably needs repotting. How long do they live?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, she's got a good old plant there. Eight years, that's formidable. That's great. Well, it needs repotting, yeah, you know, every year to 2 years again. That's always protocol. You don't want to let them go too long. Once the potting mix starts to break down and get to the rotting point, it sometimes rots the roots right along with it. And once you've gotten to that point, it's kind of tough to come back from that road. So, you know, if it hasn't been transplanted in the last 2 years, I'd highly recommend addressing that. And how long do they live? Oh my gosh, orchids live indefinitely. And we have orchids in our collection at the greenhouse that are pushing almost 100 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the original orchid specimens that were ever collected from the jungles of South America are still growing and alive today at Kew Garden, England. And that's over 250 years ago that those plants were brought back. So, yeah, yeah, the orchid will live indefinitely, and that's one of the interesting things about that plant.
Wow. And, you know, I would really like, and I was in England, but we did not go to Kew Gardens, and that's a place I would really love to visit sometime.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's on my bucket list as well. One of my very good orchid colleague friends up in Plymouth, Minnesota, who also runs a commercial orchid business, he visits there quite frequently, and he raves about it. And the plants that are archived there are just absolutely amazing.
We had caller Mary wondered if it's true that vanilla orchids have to be hand-pollinated.
They do. There has been no discovery of the natural pollinator yet in the wild, according to Ken Cameron's book. And Ken also does a really great program, presentation, lecture, what have you, on vanilla orchids. And the last time I sat in on that, too, there was no discovery, so it's still a myth of what insect or what actually pollinates them in nature. But, yeah, they do need to be pollinated mechanically, and it's a very simple process. A tool as simple as a toothpick is all you need, and a pair of reading glasses if you can't see well, so you can get right in there. And the pollen is very small. I mean, it's like the size of a pinhead or slightly larger, and where it needs to be placed is in the stigmatic surface. It's all relatively close together in proximity on the flower, and the mechanics of it is very straightforward. It just has to be done. And again, if it isn't done early in the morning, by afternoon that flower is expired and you've lost your chance of making a successful pollination because the flower is just too weak to actually take the pollination. So that's, again, why vanilla is kind of pricey, and you can get a bundle of vanilla beans that you can hold in the palm of your hand, and you know, that's a couple $100 worth of cured beans right there. And it takes, you know, a very, very long time to get to that process. So, yeah, it's billion-dollar business, and vanilla orchid is grown circumtropically all around the globe now for flavor production. And you'll get different flavors from the different species grown at different latitudes around the tropics. So it's just really an interesting plant. And I just love Ken's book, too. It's just so much fun to read.
You know, given the, you know, you wonder sometimes who was the first one that figured out about these vanilla beans and you know, getting it done right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it dates way, way back to the Aztecs, actually. And, again, in Ken's book, there's some really great history on that. Part of that I don't recall right at the moment, but been going for, you know, thousands of years. Madagascar is probably still one of the biggest vanilla producers, I think, in the world at this time. And they did have a complete crop failure some years ago with, you know, a massive storm that came through and wiped out pretty much everything. But I'm pretty sure they've rebuilt from that point. Vanilla is a very fast-growing orchid plant in orchid terms. You can see on a plant just here in Wisconsin, you can get 2 to 3 feet of vine growth on it in a year easily. So once they get going, they really take off. And again, out at Olbrich, you can see their plant growing right straight up one of the palm trees in the conservatory there. And John at Ulbrich has to constantly trim that thing back and cut portions of it off because it just gets going and it gets from one plant to the next. So,
and it hangs, you said it'll even attach to glass?
Yes, the roots will almost adhere themselves to just about anything. It doesn't have to even be porous. So the root is a very interesting substance there. It has these very, very fine hair called cilia. And the hair is just almost barely visible with the naked eye. And this hair just really grasps a hold of anything. And you think glass is non-porous, but actually, it is quite porous when you look at it very, very close with high magnification. So these real fine hairs get right in there and they stick onto that and hold that plant upright. And it just climbs all over. It's so cool.
That's got to be one of the, what's the coolest orchid from your point of view?
That's a tough one. Yeah. Well, personally, I'm a Phragmopedium fanatic. So probably the coolest orchid in my archive right now is the Phragmopedium kovacii, which, was recently discovered in Peru in 2002, which I played somewhat a part in, procuring the plants of and growing them here in the United States. So it's kind of a long story with that one, but that is probably my favorite and most stunning orchid right now. And it is really difficult plant to grow, and I'm still struggling with it after all these years. So,
it's not purple color.
It's
the purple one.
Oh my gosh. It is so stunning to see it in real life. Back when it was discovered, the New York Times had dubbed it as the most important and influential orchid discovery in over 100 years. And when I first read that article, I knew that I had to get involved with this plant. And I'll tell you, it has given me a lot of headaches, a lot of heartaches, a lot of smiles. I was actually one of the first growers in the United States to exhibit a flowering specimen of this species at our local orchid show here in Madison in 2009. So that was my triumphant moment.
Oh, man. Chuck Aker, our guest. Chuck, orchid expert extraordinaire. Great to have him with us for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about orchids today. They bring an exotic flair to the home or office, and the blooms can be wonderfully long-lasting. But there's a little bit of work that goes into that plant, getting it ready to flower. And I tell you what, we've got a world authority on orchids right here in Wisconsin and right here in my studio. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along as we visit with Chuck Aker with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. He also propagates and sells orchids through his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. And Chuck, thanks again for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, my pleasure. It is so much fun to be on here with you.
We have open lines, so you can join in if you have a question or comment or maybe a cool experience to share about orchids that you've grown. The number, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And we have from Josh a photo. He said, I just wanted to share one of my faves that I grew, and this beautiful white.
Yeah, yeah.
Orchid. I don't know what it, I have no idea, and you may not know.
Well,
you can't see you just see the flower. And
oh, that one is that's a beautiful Paphiopedilum. That is okay. The Asian version of the lady slipper. By the way, the lady slipper is, the Minnesota state flower too, so that's one of the commonly grown orchids here in the northern North America. But Paphiopedilum, Asian slipper orchid. This looks like one of the naturally occurring species that may come from Vietnam or Thailand. And believe this might be Paphiopedilum nivium or possibly a hybrid that has nivium in it as a parent, and it's just gorgeous. These plants are relatively small. You can get a beautiful specimen-sized plant in a 4-inch pot, The little stem comes up about 3-4 inches, maybe, sometimes a little taller. That flower pushing probably 4 inches around, 3-4 inches in diameter, just gorgeous, really fun plants. Now, most of these tropical Asian lady slipper species are very easy to grow in an average home, too. They typically like it warm and low light, so it's not an orchid that you would be putting outside for the summer in most cases. You'd want to keep it in your house where it's protected, and the home temperatures, you know, anywhere from 65 to 85, just ideal for these plants. Wow. And they'll flower for a good couple of months, and a lot of those species will bloom twice a year once they're fully matured as well. So that's a beauty.
That is a beauty. And we've got Mary and Hubertus with questions about maybe some more potential beauties. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Hey, I have a question. I saw online one time when I was just looking around. It was, I believe, a Japanese orchid that looked like a dragon. They had long petals hanging down in the front. It almost looked like, you know, an Asian rendition of a dragon. Hmm. Does that mean anything to you?
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. One of the more popular Japanese-type orchid species genera is the Neophanetia, Neophanetia, commonly known as well. I don't know if that's really what you're referring to or not, but
How do you spell that?
Neophanetia is Neophanetia.
Okay.
Yep, and if you throw that into Google, you should be able to come up with some images easily on that particular orchid genera. And if that's not it, then I don't know if I can help you any further there.
You'd have to see if you saw a photo, you'd know.
Yeah, having a photo or something really helps, yeah.
If you've got a photo, you can, and the time, you could post it up on my Facebook page, we can take a look at it.
Yeah, you know, there's like 30,000 naturally occurring orchid species in the world, and there's 150 to 200,000 man-made hybrid orchids, so it's a big flowering plant family.
And you don't know everyone.
No. I'm working on it, though.
Thanks, Mary.
Can I ask another question?
Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I just heard you mention that I've got Phalaenopsis, a number of them, and I had them in an east window where the sun is really strong in the morning, but that's okay for them?
Yes, typically it is. You know, if you've got a spot that's like really intense, you know, that can be an issue. But generally speaking, in 95% of the cases, that east window has not ever been harmful to the Phalaenopsis leaf.
They can take that sun.
Yeah, it's just a matter of watching that leaf, and if you happen to get a little bit of sunburn on there, it's just going to be a dime-sized or quarter-sized, you know, scalded tissue spot. Then you know you met your threshold, you know, but I just recommend to give your orchid as much light as you can, short of sunburning it, because that's when they grow and flower the best.
Okay, because, I moved them to a north-facing window thinking that it might be too strong, but in the winter, the east might be better.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, and then also, I came in late, but I asked the answering person, you talked about repotting and cutting back the roots,
mm-hmm.
and she said I could ask you to kind of go over that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, when you repot, you can cut back some of the old roots. You'll definitely want to clean up anything that looks, rotten or weak. You know, the good root of an orchid, when you squeeze it, it's solid. It feels really nice and firm. And the bad roots, the rotten roots, are going to be the ones that are real soft and mushy almost, and so you can just trim those off. And again, if you have more than one orchid and you're doing that on several plants, make sure that you sterilize your cutting tool with something. Flame is always the best. Some alcohol or bleach, you know, just get that tool sterilized, and definitely, you know, wash your hands so you don't promote or spread any of the viruses.
There you go.
So if I have these orchids that are in like 4-inch pots that I've got, and they've got roots, they're healthy roots growing all over and outside of the pot, you don't trim those back? How do you repot those?
Well, you can get those healthy roots tucked into the pot and then covered up with the fresh potting medium. You may hear some cracking or see some breaking in the process of tucking those air roots in, but that's not a problem. They'll take right off.
Okay, so it should just go in the next bigger pot and you tuck those into the medium.
Yeah. Generally speaking, yes.
And as you were saying, it should be a little bit of a chore kind of to tuck them back in, shouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to easily be able to tuck them in.
Correct. Yeah.
That's too wide.
Yep. You want to kind of work on it a little bit. You know, if you can easily set that root system into that pot, you probably got too big of a pot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Marianne. That was a good. That was a good thing to repeat for people. Sharon in Verona. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have Phalaenopsis, and I have one that produced a secondary plant on the flowering stalk.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it for about a good year plus. It's been doing very well, and that's what's been blooming. Do you advise leaving it as is, or am I better off transplanting that, or...
Okay, so you have what's commonly known as the keiki, which grew up on where the flower stem was, so the plant reproduced mm-hmm. itself up there. Does your little keiki or your little baby orchid up there have some roots coming off of it?
Oh, it's actually about as big as the original plant. It's got several roots, and it's boomed several times. It's actually doing better. I have another Phalaenopsis now with two flower stalks, and I'm seeing that develop little, you call them keikis?
Keiki or kaiki, it's a Hawaiian term for baby.
Oh, keikis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I have another one doing it now, too. And
okay.
So, right.
Well, that's not a bad thing, so you're getting some reproduction of your plant there. So, yes, once that little baby plant has its own root system, you've got a couple, three roots that are coming off of it, it can be cut off of that stem and then planted in its own individual pot and let it take off, and you'll have a beauty.
I'll have a beauty. Well, it's doing so well, actually. It has more like about 8 or 9 long ear roots on it right now. So
wow.
I wonder, seeing how it's doing so well up there in the air, whether leave it alone or...
Yeah, yeah. I'd probably transplant it because it's going to get to the point where it's going to get crazy on you up there.
Yeah, so put her in a pot. Sharon, thanks a lot for calling. All right. Jen in Watertown. Hi, thank you for calling.
Did you say Watertown?
Yes, come on, come on board with us.
Okay, I will. I've got quite a few orchids here, and they're full of roots, and they're coming out from every which direction.
Oh,
good.
Right now they're not blooming.
Okay.
And I don't know if I should cut some of those off. One is about a foot up in the air, straight up.
Yeah, well, it's not recommended to cut those aerial roots off because they are actually real happy roots. That means, you know, you've got some happy plants there if you've got that kind of root action going. So you really don't want to deter that, you know, from happening. Those roots are doing something, you know, they're pulling in the moisture, they're getting moisture and fertilizer and so on when you're getting them wet, when you're watering and feeding and so on. It's really best to try to get some of those in the pot at the time of transplanting. So, you know, if you're up for the transplanting process at this time.
I have taken them in to you before, and I think I will do it again, although mm-hmm. Wanakee was torn up a while here, and I think it's open now that I could come through.
Mm-hmm, sure, bring them on out and get them transplanted.
I don't have an appointment, do I?
No, you just bring them on out, and we'll get those air roots tucked back in those pots for you.
Sounds great. And I might want one of those blue ones that you were talking about. Those sound great.
Oh, absolutely. Beautiful flower.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, thanks much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And we're going to go to Ann in Duluth, Minnesota next, but you can join in too. We've got finally get some open lines here again for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quick. Ann in Duluth, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I grow mainly paths and frags and have done for 30-odd years now. And sometime before I die, I'd like to try a few of Terry Root's orchids from the Orchid Zone.
Mm-hmm.
I admired his work. And I'm wondering, I know he grows only commercially, and I'm wondering if you know of anyone, if you do, or you know of anyone who sells his hybrids.
Yes. Occasionally, we do get some product from the Orchid Zone. Right now, we're just, I think, probably sold out of what we obtained 2 years ago, and I don't foresee another order coming up right at the moment. There's, let's see, Orchids Limited in Plymouth, Minnesota. I would highly recommend contacting them. They often deal with Terry and his plants.
Okay.
And then there's a gentleman down in around the Chicago area. His business is called Orchid Inn.
Okay.
And he's always out by Terry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Paphiopedilums mostly, probably not so much frags.
Right.
But Orchids Limited, I would highly recommend there for Phragmopedium and Paphiopedilum for sure. And then the Orchid Inn down in Illinois there.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Now, why, and I guess I could have asked Ann this question, but I'll ask you the question. Why would, now, what is it about Terry Root that that Ann might find, okay, those orchids are really something?
Yeah. Terry Root is like the god of the Paphiopedilum or the slipper orchid family, I guess is what we call him, because, he's a very interesting man. You know, if you met him on the street, you would never think that he was an orchid hybridizer, world-renowned orchid hybridizer. At that, he a very large man with a very large beard, and he's a formidable looking guy, and he's dealing with these beautiful orchids, and he's been doing that for many years out in California. Has a wonderful nursery, basically somewhat private. He only produces large scale. He'll grow out 10,000 of one particular species, and then he'll select one or two very, very fine cultivars out of that for his continuing breeding program. So, yeah, he's really created probably some of the best hybrids that are out there right now.
And a good name for a plant guy is Root.
Absolutely.
That's a kind of like the perfect name.
Absolutely.
1-800-642-1234. Linda in Oconomowoc, what's going on with you?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't know for sure what it is, but it's got broad leaves. Well, the main thing is it has black spots.
Yeah.
On the edge of the leaves. And I heard once to put cinnamon on it, so I don't know if that's what that does, but it's somewhat helping where the flowers don't fall off. And this is a fragrant little flower.
Okay.
And plant grows tall, and then the leaves come off the, I don't know what you would call the main stalk.
Mm-hmm. The pseudobulb, yeah.
Yeah, suitable. Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the main thing is the black spot.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a dendrobium there, and they do commonly get a lot of black spot on their leaves. It is a fungus, and it isn't all that harmful, and it isn't all that detrimental, but it does look a little alarming. There's a couple of sprays you could use if you wanted to try something on it, depending on the scale of your situation. I don't know if it really deems to be treated or not.
Okay.
Kind of have to leave that up to you, but there's a product out there too, the Bear 3-in-1. It's got some fungicidal properties to it, and then there's also neem oil, which is fairly decent to use and very obtainable too through most garden centers and hardware stores. But again, it's not anything I'd be too alarmed about. Your cinnamon probably isn't going to do a whole lot on that because there's so many leaves and it's just so difficult to get the cinnamon to stick where you want it to stick on that particular type of plant.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned unless you really feel like the whole thing is really getting out of control, then go ahead and spray it with either one of those two products.
There you go.
Does it spread from plant to plant?
In that particular genus, it does. Yeah, the dendrobium kind of inherent to having that leaf spot, but it won't go to like your Phalaenopsis or a Cattleya, or an Oncidium or anything. It kind of stays particular genus specific.
Okay.
So I don't think you're too worried.
There you go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for calling. We had a Facebook comment. Karen wondered about the caller regarding the Japanese type orchid with the. She wondered if it was with the long petals. Could that be the Phragmopedium, the China Dragon?
Well, the China Dragon is just basically a hybrid name. It really has nothing to do with, So, no, that really
probably
wouldn't
not.
Be. Yeah.
All right. Well, Barb in Fond du Lac has a question. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I don't have a lot of luck with orchids, but a friend of mine has a wonderful plant, And she was only told to put 3 ice cubes on it once a week, and that would be the only watering she does, mm-hmm. whether it's in full flower or resting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, it's not wrong.
It's not the ideal, though. Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah. We get that a lot. You know, there's been a company that has implemented watering their orchid in that fashion, and it does work for their product. It works very well for their product because they designed it for that. Your typical orchid, on the other hand, no, we really don't recommend that type of watering practice. But back to, you know, the way it's being done there, if it's successful and it's working, gosh, by all means, you know, we always recommend do not change. You know, if it's not broke, you can't fix it. So you know, if you're doing well with that, that's what you want to continue to do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Barb. Patricia in Milwaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. Last Christmas, I purchased a Vanda orchid from Chuck, and it had gigantic blooms.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's reblooming, so I figure, I guess I'm doing something right.
Oh, good.
But the blooms are not huge.
Okay.
They're nice, but they're not huge.
Are they in full bloom now? Has it been open a couple of weeks now, or where are you?
It's been open about a week, not 2 weeks.
Okay. There's a good chance that they're still developing, so I would be a little patient on that yet, because as I stated earlier, it is a very interesting flower. As it opens up, it morphs from a very pathetic looking flower into this gorgeous 5-inch, you know, periwinkle blue. So, you know, maybe give it a little time yet. And are you fertilizing?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you give it plenty of light and fertilize it. I'm sure that you're doing culturally everything correct because you've gotten it to flower. So that tells me that, you know, you're right on the money there. I would just give it a little bit more time. Sometimes in the home environment, it'll take a little longer for the flower to actually, what we call, ripen and get to its full potential. So, you know, let's look at it in 2 weeks and see where you are there. Yeah.
Okay. I tuned in late, so I didn't hear the previous discussion about Vanda.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Take a measurement of the bloom just across from petal to petal and just make record of that. And then next week, measure it again and see where you're at. I'll bet you get some size on that yet.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. You know, we've got another book, The Scent of Scandal. That's another one of the orchid books that, it's a little different orchid book, though, isn't it?
Yeah. That book I'm actually in, and that comes from the whole debacle of the discovery of the Phragmopedium kovacii in 2002. Like I said, I was played part of that, and since I played a part of that plant's, you know, importation to the United States and hiking to its original sites in Peru after it was discovered, I kind of got involved with it a little deeper than I think I really wanted to at the time. But yeah, a lot of interesting things. You know, I've been doing growing orchids, you know, commercially full time for almost 40 years. And just when you think you've seen it all, something like this comes along and you see what can really happen when really super crazy people get involved with the collecting of a plant like this. And, you know, this is probably was one of the more interesting collections in the last 100 years to be discovered. And some of it went awry, you know. There was, so anyway, this gentleman down in Florida wrote a book about it. So,
and you're in it.
And I'm in it.
Chuck, thank you so much. I look forward to another visit from you. Chuck Aker is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. He also propagates and sells orchids through his own business, and that's called Flasks by Chuck Aker. And we, of course, have a link on my Facebook page. So if you go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, you're going to get a link to Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee and also Flasks by Chuck Aker. And I want to thank you all very much for listening, and I hope you'll stay with us because we have lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.